All right, good morning, everybody. Should we start with another song?
Sure.
No, we're not gonna do that.
Do you want to lead us in a song?
Okay, we have a real live former camp director here. Macy's crowding me. It is quite an honor to introduce Macy B. Hart, who has had a major impact on my life, and he was responsible for me finally having my first Jewish summer camp experience, as I explained, but I was in my 30s when that happened, kind of kicking and screaming. Let me give a formal introduction to Macy. Macy is president and founder of the Goldring Moldenberg Institute of Southern Jewish Life in Jackson, Mississippi. It provides rabbinic services and educational and cultural programs in communities where Jewish resources are limited. We all know this experience and this story. But beginning in 1970, Macy Hart served for 30 years as director of the Henry S. Jacobs Camp in Utica, Mississippi. And in 1986, he founded the Museum of the Southern Jewish Experience, which in 2000 became the Institute for Southern Jewish Life. From 2004 to 2008, he chaired the Council of American Jewish Museums, CAJM. And Macy received an honorary doctorate of humane letters from the Hebrew Union College, a Covenant Award, it's a very distinguished award for outstanding Jewish educators, a Jewish Cultural Achievement Award in 2013, an award from the Mississippi Religious Leadership Conference. And I think, and I'm sure you all understand this, that the work that Macy B. Hart has done in Mississippi and in the American South is phenomenal. It's really a model for regional Jewish education, preservation, documentation, the kind of, for the nation, really for the world. Many people have come and looked at the kind of model that Macy has created in Mississippi. We talked yesterday about how transformative camp has been for Southern Jews, and it's not just camp now. It's really the whole Institute for Southern Jewish Life. It's now spread into the Upper South, which we're really thankful for, and for how that's impacting, preserving and saving and interpreting and exploring and celebrating our historical worlds and the evolving world of the Jewish South today. So we try to work really closely with what Macy is doing at the Institute by bringing their historians and exchanging lots of students from Carolina to go and work with the Institute, which has been a really powerful relationship. But I'm just very thankful to him for helping to raise me up, hopefully, and for all that he's doing for everybody and for us today. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, Marcy. I've got a lot to say about Marcy. I just got to remember where my program is. Here we go. So I need to find the one that says run the slideshow. Oh, I got it, yeah. And then from the beginning, there we go. Okay, thank you. So I told Dale and Marty when they asked me if I would participate in this, or told me I was participating in this, that I really am not very accustomed to public speaking, and rarely do this, actually. So I just want you to bear with me, but because of my 30 years of being a kid just a year older every year, because I would play basketball with these children that were 18, 19, 20, 22-year-olds. The games would start at midnight. They would last till 1 or 2, and the only person who was the different age every year was just me, because every year the counselors were 18, 19, 21, 22. So I'm used to working with kids like you. And I want you to work with me a little bit, because we're going to do some interactive stuff. And then I'll get to my formal speech, and I'll show you how long it is. So it'll be about this long. But I've got some things that are going to help me do this program to kind of get you to get a sense of that you're sitting in a room of normalcy. Because so much of our opportunity is the Jewish community, or the Jewish community as a part of the overall community, is normal. We just are isolated so much because there's not a lot of connection. Even in a community that's got multiple synagogues, there are these impenetrable walls that have been built up so that this group of educators, for example, at this synagogue may be good at one age group and not at another. And this one at this place where there's a religious school is good with an older age and not with the younger. And we don't let them work together except for cordial things like who's doing a Israel night or an environment protection day. So if you don't mind, and since this is a tough time period, and since a lot of you did not get to do your workouts this morning, we're going to do some up and down stuff. And again, I'm used to working with kids your age, so I know that it can work. So we're going to start off while you're still full of energy doing things that are going to require you to stand up and sit down. And I want to do, honestly, when we get through with this, kind of want to set the stage for the PowerPoint so that I can talk with you about what is the future looking like and what are we going to do about it, because we can do many things about it. Just a couple of questions before we start the interactivity. How many of you have read or heard about or saw this now famous Pew Charitable Trust report on the Jewish community's state of being? All right, and keep your hands up if you have. Now, for those of you who have your hands up, keep it up if you are shocked or worried about the outcome of that. Okay, thank you. I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute for those of you who are not familiar with the Pew Trust, but I'm not going to talk a lot about it. All right, so I would like for you to stand up if you currently live today where you were raised. All right, that's 2, 4, 6, 7, 8. Okay, please be seated. Now I'd like for you to stand up if you were raised somewhere else other than where you live today. Okay. Thank you. I would suggest that the next time you're doing any sort of group meeting, because this is a Jewish story, but it's also the American story. But the next time you're in a random group, why don't you just do that little check? Because we think that 75% of us, at minimum, do not live where we were raised. That's an issue that the Jewish community has not dealt with, actually. We wait until people get to where they're going to try to get them active. So let me ask a question. If you've heard some of this presentation before, you are not allowed to answer this question. But who knows where baseball starts?
Cooperstown.
There's Cooperstown. I'm echoing. I didn't say he's right. He's absolutely wrong. Anybody?
Youngstown.
What was that?
Youngstown.
Youngstown's equally wrong. Mississippi's worse. So it started. It starts with T-ball. Think outside the box. T-ball. T-ball leads to Little League. Little League leads to Pony League, high school ball, semi-pro ball, college ball, minor leagues, and then the professional teams. There's not a single baseball player that we know of today who was in the stands one day, never played ball in their life, went out, bought a glove, a bat, and a ball, showed up at the offices of the New York Yankees and said, I'd like to try that. It's a feeder system. We have a problem in the Jewish community with the fact that we don't really do outreach, we don't connect our communities, we don't work together. We're historically bad about it because we are historically set in a way of being independent on our own. We don't have a pope, we don't have our Grand Rabbi. Each congregation is is its own authority, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that we built these walls. So I'd like now to get you to do some more of this interactive. I would like to know, I'd like for you to stand up if you went to whatever they call it, Hebrew school, Sunday school, Sabbath school. Stand up if you went to Sunday school. All right, now don't sit down yet, unless you loved it. Sit down if you
liked
it. Stay standing if you liked it. If you didn't like it or love it, please sit down. Okay, it's a small percentage still within the room. All right, thank you for that. How many of you taught Sunday school? Stand up. Okay. Now remain standing if you are qualified and certified. How many of you went to college? Okay. All right, now wait. I'd like for you to sit down if you did not meet somebody at college that you never knew before. If you met somebody, if you met new people and friends from other parts of the country where you grew up, if you didn't, you can sit down. So, you all pretty much met lifetime friends. All right, you can sit down again. How many of you today belong to a congregation? You can just write. Oh, you can stand. That's fine. Belong to a congregation. Okay. I want you to remain standing. If you're a part of a congregation that more than 10% of the census of that congregation, family units or whatever, is in the pews on the most important holiday that we say as Jews we have, which is the Sabbath, are in the pews on Friday night and Saturday morning. Stay standing if 10% or more of that congregation is there for that night. Okay, you can be seated. You can be seated.
You have to go.
You know, somebody else beat you to that line. Yeah, exactly. You know, that is true. You got to go to know whether that's the case. So. All right. How many of you belong to a congregation? This is a really important one. Please stand if you belong to a congregation that is not having financial issues. Really, all of those congregations are
Well, those three people are the same.
That's okay. But this is an individual. This is me and you. So I want you to stand up if you're not having financial issues. Okay. That's good. Because there are very few congregations in the country that are not dying.
Financial issues and dying are two different things.
Yeah. Well, they have a lot of relationship to each other. We'll get to that other part.
We have more dead than alive.
All right. Raise your hands in this case if you have children. Okay. Stand up if you have children that are beyond college age. Okay, hands up, sit down. How many of you have children still at home below college age?
Wow.
All right, stand up again if you have children that are college age and older, as we said. So that's all of you, pretty much again. Stand up if your kids are out of college and living somewhere. At least one. Thank you. If you have at least one kid or more who has graduated from college and moved away, it doesn't matter if they've moved away, just that age group. All right? Stay standing if your kid or kids have affiliated with a congregation. Okay? So obviously, stand up if you have kids out of college, living somewhere that did not affiliate with a congregation. Okay, you can have a seat now. So here's the deal. And what Marty asked me to talk about, I'm coming to. But I needed to kind of set the stage because he wanted me to talk about how the Institute came into being and why. And my 30 years of being a camp director kind of introduced me to the Jewish world that we really live in. And I wrote once the 20 top issues, my opinion. It's my opinion. I put my name on it because it's not scientifically researched. It's just my opinion. And the 20 top issues, which I didn't bring for y'all today because you can do the same thing because, again, it's just my opinion. But one of them is about there's no consensus in the Jewish community of what the community agenda is. So if all of you, or when you get home with some of your congregants, sat down and you didn't let anybody copy off anybody's paper, and you said, write down what you consider to be 10 of the top Jewish issues, doesn't have to be positive or negative. It's an issue that we need to be facing. We would find a lot of these issues that I just had you go through this little exercise with, because we need to more fully understand what are the problems in the Jewish community. So just a quick show of hands, I think, may prove the point. How many of you, in some way or another, are worried about, just a hand raised, about the Jewish future? So that says that it is a community agenda, it seems to me. That's a consensus piece. And that's one of the reasons that the Institute came into being. So if you'll pardon me 1 minute, I want to try to get this thing back up. Rachel?
Call Rachel.
There we go. All right. Well, it's Rachel's computer.
It doesn't matter.
All right. So I'm going to leave that up for a minute while I talk a few minutes more about. So this is the state of South Carolina within our activity map where we've done programs. I'm just going to let that be the backdrop for the moment. Because our position, my own personal position, and one of the reasons that we do some of the things we do at the Institute. By the way, the reason I founded the Institute of Southern Jewish Life was because I had to have a job, and a mortgage, and house payments, and kids in college, and crap like that. So nobody in their right mind would ever hire me to do anything. So if I want a job, I have to found something that would hire me. So full disclosure, transparency. So let me give you a little bit of my own background, because I think it's probably the same as most of your background. And that was one of the reasons that I had you do some of these interactive pieces, is so that we kind of get a sense, because people are from different places. I heard Oregon, didn't I hear Oregon? Places. I'm here from Mississippi, but I could have lived in South Carolina if I hadn't been lucky enough to live in Mississippi. Well, wait, that's not funny. I like it. My God, Marcy's from Arkansas. Bill's from Mississippi. I mean, we've done a few things in those states. And we have Gap and Banana Republic and CBS, cable TV, stuff like that.
But the good thing is, we thank God for Mississippi.
I've heard things like that. I'm not going to get into politics. Who's one of the senators from the South? No. Here's my little quick story, because I guarantee you it mirrors some of your own. My family was the only Jewish family in this little town, 80 miles from Cleveland, Mississippi, where we went to Sunday school. My mom and dad are merchants. They're retired. I can't say they were merchants, because that would make you think they're deceased. But my dad turned 97 the end of July. My mom turned 89 on the 11th of September. They celebrated their 70th wedding anniversary August 22nd, and I'm trying to find my father a job, because they renewed their driver's licenses in September, and they are both just on the road all the time. Last week, in a three-day period, they drove to Jackson. They live about 20 miles north of Jackson. They drove to Jackson to go see the play Chicago at night in the Traveling Broadway series. The next day they drove in for the regular round of doctor's appointments, and the next day they drove to Greenwood, Mississippi to a funeral of their longtime accountant. They're fine. And my father calls me on a fairly regular basis to ask me if I read this article in Forbes. Did you see this? Did you see that? So if any of you need somebody who's really qualified as a merchant. My father can tell you what size. But here's the deal. My family was the immigrant. My mother's father was 12 when he got to Philadelphia, not Mississippi, Pennsylvania. I know you were thinking Mississippi, but he got off a boat by himself and pedaled to Winona, Mississippi, where he had a cousin, became his brother-in-law, and bought into the business. I can remember when I was 12, I was still trying to find my pacifier at night. And here is my grandfather. How many of you, please raise your hand if you have an immigrant story like this, where you had a peddler who hit the town. And when we look at why do we hit those towns, it's because maybe 15 minutes or 15 miles or 18 miles, there was a cousin who was setting us up in a business, or brothers and sisters, and we set up businesses. It's not because there was necessarily an attraction to a Jewish community. It was America, an opportunity for us to send our kids to make a living and send our kids to college. The historians and the demographers can tell you that the Jewish population studies of the 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s, 90% of all Jewish children went to college. 90%. I don't think it's as high these days. It's still a tremendous emphasis on Jewish education, on education, to get a good education so we can function in America freer than we've ever been in any other society. So my mom and dad, on Sunday morning, being in the Shmata business, and you know, in the small town, it's a town of 4,500, the county seat, everybody is in town on Saturday. African-American, the whites, the farmers, the farm laborers, everybody is in town. I remember it vividly. It was the social scene. So we were open anywhere from 8 to 10, sometimes till midnight. Many of you know this experience. On Sunday morning, there are four Hart children. I'm the second. My younger sister, Joanne, is an only child. We have just difficulties with trying to remind mom and dad that I have an older brother and I have a younger sister, that there is four total. The point is that the siblings to this day cannot stand each other, because every Sunday morning, my mom and dad, instead of the golf game, got up, threw us in the car, and made us drive with them to Sunday school. Now, many of you know that that Southern Jewish parents, and I'd say small states, learn to drive with their left hand. Because with their right hand, they are reading the Sunday school lesson on the way. Plus, it's easy to put it down and slap somebody on the back seat who did what? Touched somebody. So 80 miles, it's a two-lane road. There's cotton trailers, so sometimes you are going no faster than the cotton trailer. It is misery. It's torture. There is a textbook that Jewish parents read from, How to Torture Your Jewish Child. My wife is from a small town in Mississippi. We're coming up on our 43rd wedding anniversary in January. She's from Lexington, Mississippi, had 9 Jewish families, and it had a temple but never had a rabbi. Had a traveling rabbi from Jackson or Vicksburg or so on. Her parents read from the same textbook because there were 3 of those girls, there were 4 of us. They went to Jackson, which was only 80 miles, was only 80 miles away. We were 90, sorry. And those 20 minutes of touching each other and stuff like that were very important to us not to have to do. That's why we went to Cleveland. But my mom and dad also tortured us in ways that are beyond imagination. We were 6 hours from New Orleans. We were 4 hours from Memphis. They threw us in the cars. They made us go to museums. They made us go to the symphony. They took us to exhibits. I saw Holiday on Ice. I can tell you all about Mickey Mouse and Holiday on Ice. And we were exposed, and every year we disliked it a little less. And when I got to college, I got to see the Bolshoi, I got to see Julian Bream, I had lunch with Ramsey Clark. There were all sorts of things because I was used to it. Now I want to go back to the baseball metaphor. We don't do, in America, in the Jewish community, we don't do outreach. We wait until we get where we're going. The community waits till you get where you're going. And there is a subdivision that does have a neighborhood. And the neighborhood's got a block. And the block's got a house. And the house has got a room that contains a button that we think all of our kids and all of us who grew up in small and rural and isolated communities are going to find that room, and we're going to press that button, and fairy dust is going to come down over our heads and say, now I'm ready to get involved in the Jewish community. But it doesn't work in baseball, and it doesn't work in music. And we don't think about these things. We're doing outreach. We are putting hundreds of millions of dollars every year in trying to attract people to join our congregations, to join the JCC, to join the symphony, the museum. Nobody is immune from all of this. So I'm setting the stage for the fact that I got involved in youth group, Temple Youth Group. I was raised classically reformed. Temple Youth Group was my life. Then I got involved in the National NIFTY. For those of you who know the National Reform Movement, NIFTY. In 67, 68, I had the most phenomenal experience of my life. I got elected president of NIFTY and traveling all over the country. And for a country boy, that was a big-time eye-opener. This was a critical time in the late 60s. You know, there was a war raging. There was civil rights taking place. And the kids of America were getting involved. How many of you are some of those kids of America of the 50s and 60s? So we all know from where we are speaking. So how I got into the camp, because the title that Dale made me come up with, the title, I spent at least 30 seconds trying to come up with the title, because I don't like to give talks to begin with. So I got into all this by accident, because I made the mistake of calling the NIFTY directors in New York when I was finishing the University of Texas, one of the most esteemed and finest colleges in America, I must say. Did not qualify for the basketball team. I could have, because they were worse than my high school team. I was finishing college, and I called them to say, let me come to New York and work for 2 years for free. Just, I need to give something back because of what it had done to me. And a month does not go by that some contacts from those days do not end up either a phone call, letter, or so on. And I traveled, honestly, all over the country collecting frequent flyer miles. And in that collection, I have opportunities to be with people who are from that generation who are impactful in their communities. They said, why don't you go to the camp we're going to open this summer in Mississippi that your community worked so hard to get? The Jacobs Camp. Have you ever heard of the Henry Jacobs Camp in Utica, Mississippi? Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, West Tennessee was the territory. That camp was turned down by the Reform Movement in 65. It was turned down by the Reform Movement in 67. There was no need for a camp for the Jewish kids. The Southern Jews were expendable. That's all in writing. And most of us were stereotyped, as you can probably remember. Most of us were stereotyped as rednecks. We mirrored our population, and our population wasn't even all that either. So in 1969, this group of continuing, hard-struggling Jewish visionaries said, we're going to try one more time. They went to the biennial. They brought it up. It failed again. Parliamentary procedure was the way meetings were run in those days, and so they called for a table and a recess. They took the leadership behind the closed doors. And after they said, we're going to beat the crap out of you if you don't, no, they didn't really say that, but they said, we're going to open this camp in June of 1970 with you or without you. We broke ground in 1967 to build this camp. The leadership did not understand the determination of Southern Jewish parents to make sure their kids had exposure and an opportunity and experience. So guess what? They came back in off the recess, off the table, brought it up, because they were getting ready to get this debt-free facility that was built by grassroots. Henry Jacobs was deceased. It was sort of a tribute. There was no big money. There was no naming that took place. They came in, they took the boat. The camp was allowed. It opened. They could not, it was going to open. They could not find the director. I have all the files. They asked rabbis all over the country. There was to have a director to come work in Mississippi. Fortunately for me, nobody wanted to do that. And I said, I'll go to Mississippi, not to be the director. I was just going for 2 years. Then, frankly, I was going to go to law school, go back to Mississippi, and I was going to be the governor. I just felt like that's, you know, that's a good thing to do. And the state had already been founded. It was born on December 10th, 1817. I was born on December 10th, 1947. We had a lot in common. I just be the governor. That was my goal because I wanted to be a part of the change. So I was only going to do it for 2 years. And I ended up being the director because I couldn't find anybody who would take the job. And my 2 years lasted for 30. And along that way, because I didn't know any better, I wish I had been able to get here yesterday to see Roger, because Roger and I were kids together, because the only time I ever worked at a camp was the summer before I became a director of a camp, and that was at Blue Star for Herman and Harry. And that was an extraordinary experience, and I loved it, and I loved those guys, and we helped them get a Torah. Turned out in Herman's memory for their chapel in the last 2 or 3 years. So anyway, so that led to me becoming the director of the camp. It was an accident. It should never have happened. I can guarantee you I've got a list of parents whose kids went there who would say it never should have happened. My own kids would say it never should have happened, although my wife is the smart one of the two. We sent our kids to one of our sister camps. So they could grow up also being camp kids as opposed to, do you think your dad would get mad if they broke this window? Do you know what's for breakfast next week? Do we get lunch every day here? So we wanted our kids to have the experience of being campers. And so one thing led to the next. The camp started being the center because we didn't have, in the four states I mentioned, again, Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana, West Tennessee, we only had two Jewish community centers in the entire area, Memphis and New Orleans. None of these other states had a Jewish community center. The day I took my job, my assignment was the territory, the 48 congregations in that territory of those four states, 48 Reformed congregations, 36 of them didn't have a rabbi. I thought, well, geez, we'll be the Jewish community center. If I could drive 160 miles every Sunday and being tortured, why can't other people do the same thing? Because we would drive 3 or 4 hours just to go to a dance when we were teenagers. And we did. We had all the major scholars and lecturers and authors, and we even had Saturday night entertainment. I brought a canter down once from New York to do a Saturday evening program on Yiddish theater, and the people from Arkansas were just complaining so much that they had to come all the way to Mississippi to get Yiddish theater. So, I'll take that one out. That wasn't that funny, apparently. So we made it a Jewish community center, and we started kids meeting and being with each other at a much earlier age, and we did the regional 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. We did the youth group. We founded a camp for severely physically challenged children. It used to be handicapped. Politically correct today is physically challenged. Not Jewish kids. It's the Tikkun Olam, Repair of the World. And the teenagers became the staff. And that camp is 38 years old now. And it still goes strongly. And now all the doctors, nurses, PTs, OTs, and all of that middle and upper staff are former counselors from the Jewish youth group. So it's impactful. Jewish camping is impactful. And the reason I said earlier I was raised in it, because I was 22 when I became the director of this camp by default. And I got to grow up, as I mentioned about the basketball story, I got to grow up every year because the only person who had changed age from 1 year to the next was me. So South Carolina's got the same issues. And I'm getting ready to show you some things that will help bring some of this into perspective and why there is an Institute of Southern Jewish Life and why there is an opportunity to collect all of us together, why we can share resources. my friend Marty back there, who, if this does not go well this morning, you just take it to Marty, because he's the one that called me. He knows I don't like to do this. He made me do it. So it's his fault. So, and Dale is not innocent either. So this is where we've put a program. This is just, again, to show you a little bit. But now let's get into the... This is a quick thing. You hadn't got time to read it. So, there's every congregation in the United States. Look at the bottom. The Reform, Conservative, / Traditional, Orthodox, Reconstructionist, Unaffiliated, and Other. I've been speaking for 40 years about the rising unaffiliated and what we are not doing. And these are some of the things that I'm talking to you about, because you're sitting in South Carolina. Some of you are from other places. Some of you are in South Carolina. And so we just decided, since the leadership of the United States movements and communal organizations have never done this, it was time for us to see this. So there's every congregation in the United States.
What is the yellow one? I can't read it.
Well, I'll come to it. Here's that. So the blue is for congregations with a full-time rabbi. These are buildings that belong. Look at North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming. Montana now no longer has a full-time rabbi, because that rabbi just in the last 2 months moved to Alexandria, Louisiana. So we're back to four states without a full-time rabbi. Here's every congregation in the United States without a full-time rabbi. Look at Montana, Wyoming, North Dakota, South Dakota. And you know what? One more hand raising. How many of you in your life either were associated with either a spouse or were yourself working and part of your salary included pension for the future? So that we could retire maybe without having to work or not work as hard. Well, the congregations, many of your congregations, if you're from small congregations, did all the right things metaphorically. Had a Sunday school, was involved in the community, had a beautiful building, were very involved on the overall landscape of the business community, made sure there was a youth group and all of that, and got no pension. Because now the small and underserved and isolated communities across the United States don't get much service. If you look, I'll show you the territory. Ours is the southern part, but this is clearly a southern issue. But it is clearly not only a southern issue. This is a national issue. And so the Institute came into being because we wanted to create opportunities that would be the baseball metaphor. And you'll see a little bit more. So here's our territory. And the blue and the orange again, that's all the congregations in those movements. Here's every congregation in our part of the country that's got a full-time rabbi. You see some population centers. Here's every congregation in our part of the world that does not have a full-time rabbi or Jewish professional. This is the organization. It's a mythical congregation. If you were looking to move to a place and you were shopping for a congregation, you would be looking for one that's got a great education department. A big mistake that we have made for generations, and I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Stimulating rabbinic presence. Involved in the community. My grandfather helped locate a plant that put 200 to 400 people. I can't say exactly because I can't remember if it was 200 jobs or 400 jobs. McGregor Sportswear. My grandfather convinced the city, the supervisors, and the state to create bonds and stuff, and located a plant in Winona in the early 50s, and my grandfather was presented, along with the mayor, the first shirts that were produced on that plant. And when my grandfather died in 1963, the entire town closed their stores from 2 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon during that ceremony, that funeral service. So we were always involved in the communities. You know that's the history. Everybody sitting in this room knows that Jewish people were involved in the communities they lived in. We have the Museum of the Southern Jewish Experience, cultural and arts things. That was the torture piece that I mentioned to you about what my mother and dad and Susan's mom and dad did to her as well. So I'm going to just give you some quick run through in the history department. So here's the community engagement. We think that high school kids are idolized by elementary kids, and we want to see kids adopt their clubs, get youth groups or National Honor Societies to adopt elementary schools, and let's get kids reading on a third grade level, and there's continuity. Because if the club adopts them and it's year after year after year, like the youth group did, the children who are severely physically challenged, when the seniors graduate, the freshmen come in, there's always continuity, get kids reading on a third grade level by the time they're at the third grade. Peer mediation, we were just got a big award and acknowledgement from Kids Count for this idea on peer mediation and conflict resolution. We started in 100% African American by invitation middle school. We're now in 3 middle schools, 3 high schools, 2 juvenile court systems, and we're ready to start exporting to the surrounding states. Here's the museum. Seeing Bill Ferris back there just makes me mad every time I see him, because he's sitting next to Marcy, who is Marcy Cohen Ferris. Marcy was the museum's first full-time staff person, and there was a program we like to collaborate. We collaborated with the Center for Southern Culture, and Marcy and Bill met because it was a merger of the museum and the center, and so I lost Marcy to the Humanities Council. For those of you, because she married Bill, they moved to Washington. He had to become head of the National Endowment for the Humanities. We just lost Dr. Stuart Rockoff. Many of you know our historian Stuart has just been tapped by the Mississippi Humanities Council to be the 3rd in their history executive director. Unbelievable honor for him. Great for us, because this is the caliber of people, Marcy Stuart, that we were able to attract to run our programs. Our museum project coordinator was actually awarded last year the Mississippi Humanities Council's Educator of the Year for her trunk show, her traveling trunk show on immigration, tolerance, and diversity. So I'm showing you the encyclopedia. I'm going to skip this because I'm going to show it to you live in a second. Here's culture and art. So this is symphony museum and stuff like that. So we are known for our regional approach. So we attracted this program to expose Israeli artists to American audiences. I didn't want drama. I didn't want print. I didn't want paint. I wanted a musician. So we interviewed this guy. He plays 26 wind instruments. We put him, our program department, put him in 106 concerts in 12 states in 6.5 months. But look, it's the Jewish community. Churches, schools, libraries, universities, congregations, JCCs, museums, public venues, always a majority of the audience was not Jewish. Isn't that good for the Jews? Because when you think about it, some of you may have heard that in the United States Senate of our country, New York has 2 U.S. senators and a voting bloc. There's a predominance of Jewish voters who vote a certain way in New York for 2 U.S. senators. So does Arkansas have 2 U.S. senators. And so does Mississippi and Louisiana and Georgia and South Carolina. So the more we interact with the non-Jewish community, and the more the non-Jewish community learns about us and who we are, and looks and sees that sometimes the stereotypes are not accurate, we need them to vote for enlightenment in the U.S. Senate as well. And so this kind of programming brings non-Jewish people in contact with the Jewish communities. We put scholars. Here's Ron Wilson. We just put him in 5 states, 9 cities, 14 days, 16 partners, 18 lectures. And if you've never heard him speak, he's amazing. He's a real speaker. I mean, he knows what he's talking about. We do this because we put these things together, but we do them up in this part of the world as well. We're not just in Mississippi. We're in the 13 states that you saw. Here's our education piece. Now, again, I want you to raise your hand. You don't have to get up. Raise your hand if you went to Sunday school. Okay. Put them down. Let me just remind you that when you went to regular school, public or private, you learned to count. Just bear with me. You may have learned to count when you were 2. But in school, you formally learned to count in the first grade. It led you to add, subtract, multiply, divide, pre-algebra, algebra, college entrance exam. Two things that many Jewish parents want, among many things, is one, our kids to get a good education so they can get into the best colleges. And two, we want them to get a good Jewish education. We would never tolerate a public or private school sector that did education the way we in the Jewish community do education, where every single congregation has to come up with their own Sunday school curriculum. And day schools are not the answer, because 1.5% or less of all Jewish children in the United States go to day schools. 90% of children who are exposed to Jewish education are in congregational schools, whatever they're called, supplemental schools, day school, Sabbath schools, Sunday schools, like I said, whatever they call it. I endured it. Many of you endured it. When I say endured it, because a lot of kids today are forced to go because I had to do it, you're going to have to do it. Now, if we look at how education works in America today, we know that we want our principal or our principal to have a master's or a PhD in the elementary world in attention span learning. How do you teach the count, add, subtract, up the ladder, spiraling to somebody like Macy who's looking out the window most of the day and trying to teach all these fundamentals? And in middle school, we need a principal who's got a master's or a PhD in raging and emerging hormones. Because how do you teach Macy math when Macy has asked his good friend Bill if Bill would ask Rachel's good friend Marcy if Rachel would go with me during math class? And I already know the answer by the time that Bill asked Marcy to ask Rachel, so I've already picked somebody else. I've asked Marcy to ask somebody else, and the teacher in the front of the room is trying to teach math. So you got to have people that understand that and have that expertise. And then in high school, it's about deep philosophical thought processes. The Jewish community today has a cross the section. You've got early childhood. You've got early childhood with young families. Then you've got elementary. Then you've got middle school. Most congregations today don't have active youth groups anymore. One of my 20 top 10 is the Jews make, we make high, we're good at making highs out of lows. We get 20 people that come to a lecture. Wow, we had 20 people that came to this lecture. But the congregation's got 500 members. And then I asked you earlier about the Sabbath, which is the thing we think is our most revered day of the week. And it's the thing we revolve around. And less than 10% of us, unless it's a big social event or a holiday, are not in the pews, and we're not working on what happened, what are the answers for the attraction. So then you've got trying to get the youth group back, and then you've got the young adults and singles who are not married and do hear the children screaming that parents don't hear when you're in a group. And then you've got 35-year-old to 70-year-olds that we burned out along the way. And then you've got this whole new group of young 65, 70 and up who have retired and are looking for intellectual enrichment. And we go hire one educator for these congregations that can afford that. One educator's got to be an expert in every single one of those ages. And we would never see that happen in the secular world. So knowing that, so the Institute set out to do something that's not been done in this country before. We created a common body of Jewish knowledge. Here's the first grade. It's 30 scripted 2-hour lesson plans. It's 5,000 pages. It's grade by grade by grade, and it assumes that the teachers are lay people. Me, absolutely unqualified to teach. But it was my turn. I was guilted into it, whatever took place. And we created a Jewish Teach for America, these 2-year fellowships. And so now, and we started in 4 states, Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and we let Mobile in because they're so close, and they asked us to put a group of educators in a room for a year across the movements, locked them in the room, and said, do not come out until you come up with what we can agree on that we want every Jewish child to know from first grade to second to third, and don't make any halakhic editorial. Don't say how many days are the right number of days for Rosh Hashanah. You leave that to the theology of the movements. We have now almost, we have 69 congregations, 61 schools that are in this curriculum. The Institute has invested $4.5 million in this, and we only charge $800 flat fee plus $36 a student because our board believes in access to Jewish education, whether there's one kid, three kids, and the fellows are in those communities working with those adults who have to be the teachers. And somebody from Beaumont, Texas is finding something, what's going on in Fayetteville, Georgia, or Lake Norman, or Fort Mill. By the way, Fort, anybody here from Fort Mill? Because Fort Mill was a small congregation that just recently split into two smaller ones.
Oh, it was Friday night.
Oh, okay. So, was anybody there? Meaning, was there a rabbi there?
No, they were lay-led, or the reforming of it is.
So, it's two small congregations in Fort Mill, and they deserve access to Jewish life. And that's what the Institute came into being to do with regard to, let's not wait, let's not continue the wait. So we have now, and you wonder why there's 60, some of you may question, why are there 61 schools if there's 69 congregations? Montgomery, Alabama, anybody from Montgomery? Relatives in Montgomery? Well, I use this even if you were. So they had three congregations 15 years ago, Sephardic, Conservative, and Reform. Now they have two. The Sephardic and Conservative merged into one, and then you have the Reform. So you got a Conservative and Reform. They were using our curriculum. Six sixth graders in one, six sixth graders in the other one. One day somebody said, hey, why don't we have 12 sixth graders and let them meet each other? Now here's the thing. They merged their school. Nobody in the room needs to worry. The adults still don't talk to each other, but the kids are growing up getting to know each other. So there are 3,000 kids on the same basic page in Jewish education in this part of the world. And as Marcy said in her very nice introduction, is that we've created a model. It was designed to be a model for what could be used in other places. And I showed you a national map. So we are actually trying to get some other places in this country to gather their leadership, both professional and lay, and their funders, and create what we've done, because we're not going national. Here's where our rabbi served. We wanted a national voice. Rachel, how much time do I have left? We wanted a national voice, not ours. We wanted a national leading rabbi to say to other large congregations, we need to be partnering with smaller congregations that don't have rabbis. So Rabbi Peter Rubenstein of Central Synagogue in New York, have any of you seen that magnificent building on 55th in Lex? Unbelievable. And he's one of the acknowledged leaders in the Reform rabbinate. And so in 2011, before the partnership, we, with our rabbi and a few loaned rabbis, we did 57 visits, 34 communities, 11 states. When we got the partnership, he gave us six clergy for 3 to 4 days each. And this is how much saturation. And look, in 12, 97 visits, 52 communities, 13 states. What's the advantage? Because now there could be a clergy alliance in a community that hadn't had a rabbinic voice in a long time. There could be opportunity for speaking at a civic club. So in 2013, so far, we've gotten 91 visits, 45 communities. Here's our footprint. Here's what the Institute and where the Institute has put a program in the last 2 years. This could be happening all over the country. If you're from a community right now that is not utilizing the Institute, you need to get with your leadership and talk about it, because nobody belongs to us. No, this, we're not a new movement. It's not about dues. We have an opportunity to change the paradigm of the way the next 10, 20, 30, and 40 years are going to be, because we're going to expose the Jewish community to a lot more. So when they get to where they are going, either to move after college or retire, it's where do I sign up? As opposed to, if you want me, try to find me. So we would like for you guys to involve yourself more with us. The historian position, by the way, the reason I didn't make it in time for Marcy's presentation and the program with Roger and the group yesterday is because I stopped. I had an interview because I'm trying very hard and quickly to replace our historian, because we still have the panhandle of Florida to do, and we're now starting to revise the encyclopedia. So that's how many miles we traveled in 2012, not counting mine. And I'm just going to show you one other quick thing. Do I have 5 minutes or not? Tell the truth.
Sure.
Okay. All right, so let me go back here.
E.
Thanks, Enid. All right, so this is the home page of the Institute. Here's the encyclopedia. So I want you to pick a state. So I'm assuming you may want to pick South Carolina. All right, so our research shows this. Dale, I think Stuart has relied heavily on you in the past for this. There's been a lot of collaboration in general across all these. These are the real troopers, the historians and the people who continue to impact through their writing and their scholarship. But there's every community that we have actual research on. Doesn't mean the surrounding areas are not included. So I want somebody to tell me what town they want to see. But before I do that, I wanted to show you, here's the overview. Oop, what did I do?
Go back to E.
I want to show you, here is the overview of the Jewish history of South Carolina. And each one of those is a link back to the congregation, or the community rather. That's the overview. It is constantly being updated in our files. We only update the encyclopedia on a sort of a regular basis. Now, somebody quickly name a town they want to know something about.
King Street.
Yeah. Kings, all right. King Street, you're right there. See what it did? It placed it on the map. Here's the overview of the Jewish history of King Street. I encourage you to go to isjl.org. It's in that handout I gave you.
Stacy, does the burials, does that link back, or did y'all do your own, or does it happen to link back?
It probably links back. We've done both. Texas, they had a group in Texas that went and documented every single Jewish cemetery in the state of Texas. So it's linked to that. And so the ones that we have are linked to y'all's, as far as I know. So there's King Street. Now, again, this is very interesting reading, and I just wanted you to see that. That is the product of our history department, and apologies again to my colleagues for not being here yesterday, but I've got to replace Stuart, and I'm interviewing some very fine candidates. So, camping, two or three real quick things. Number one, I think we ought to put every fourth and fifth grade child in camping. I have actually been meeting for the last 10 years with all of the big funders about saying Birthright. All of you know what Birthright is?
Yeah.
Fabulous program, not far enough, because it's a free trip from 18 to 26. There is not a Jewish educator in this country that wouldn't swap 6-week field trip in the 11th grade as a part of the curriculum. So we've been trying to convince the funders to let's fund putting 4th and 5th graders in camp. Go back to the Passport to Israel program, where the congregation puts up $200 a year, the family puts up $200 a year, the federation. By the time a kid gets to the 11th grade, you've got an invested-in trip, and we get kids in camp in the 4th and the 5th grade Now we're talking about year-round Jewish education. We are in conversations with a couple of foundations now to try to use some of our educational staff to work with the camps. So there's 8 Jewish camps in the South in our territory, and we are trying to get them to look at making their summer educational programs surround what the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade are doing. So think about the importance of Jewish camping. It is a no-brainer. And it's at a time when most of us in our generation and older had no concept of camping other than campouts, cookouts, hiking, and canoeing. It is a Jewish educational experience. I'm seeing the clock watcher, and she's right, because I could really go on the 3 hours that Marty promised me that I would have. Because I actually love this stuff, and I appreciate the opportunity. So if I can, I'm going to hang around. So if you want to talk to me or ask me questions. But thank you for being such an important